This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've been talking about the incredible, incredible win for Rory McIlroy yesterday at the Masters. We will continue that conversation. And what about Bryson DeChambeau? What does it mean for him now, Mike? Because, again, he was in position, and we're not talking about him choking because the bigger story is Rory. But, right. You know, DeChambeau, again, you all of a sudden have control of this thing, and you couldn't grab it. And then it felt like, Mike, he also panicked in this thing and started taking shots that he should not have taken. We're going to dive in and talk plenty more about it, guys. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Right now, though, let's talk some dogs. All right, Connor. Connor Riley from Dog Nation. Red team, black team. What do we know about this quarterback situation? Mike and I were discussing before you came on, do we have a definitive starter going into next season?
Kirby hasn't come out and said as much, but the more you hear, and certainly with what we saw on Saturday, Gunnar Stockton is comfortably ahead of Ryan Puglisi. I thought Gunnar got better as the day progressed. Look, anyone that's watched these spring games knows that it's not exactly always the most offensive-friendly situation, especially with Kirby Smart. He wants to make things difficult. I think Gunnar Stockton was a very good deep ball. I would say better than Carson Beck in that regard. And the area we're going to have to improve is just playing a little bit faster, and that's always going to be hard to do coming out of G-Day. But I thought Gunnar looked better than he did in the Notre Dame game, and Gunnar looked better against Notre Dame than he did against Texas. And I think he continues to show why he's going to be Georgia's starting quarterback. I thought Ryan Puglisi had some nice moments on Saturday, but he was much more streaky over the course of the day. And again, he looked like a player who was in his first G-Day performance. So Kirby Smart hasn't come out and said it. I would expect them to look for a very specific type of player in the transfer portal if they come available. But after everything we saw this spring and coming out of G-Day, I still very much expect Gunnar Stockton to be Georgia's starting quarterback when they next take Sanford Stadium on August 30th against Marshall.
I know that one of the things that Kirby talked about, like it can happen anywhere, but to worry about somebody coming out of your spring game with an injury. And what can you talk about Noah Thomas and the knee?
Yeah, so Noah Thomas sprain, AC sprain, which is in your shoulder, happened early on there in the game for Georgia. The good news is, you know, of the injuries that they suffered over the weekend, none of them appear to be too serious. And so I think most of all, coming out of a spring game, how healthy are you is the most important thing to look for. So in that regard, Georgia's good moving forward. It doesn't seem like anyone is going to have an injury that lingers into fall camp. And so while they were missing a few starters on the defensive side of the ball, Dalen Everett, Kristen Miller, getting this team fully healthy, as we saw last season, I think is so important, just given this new age in college football where you're just relying on a lot more unproven entities. And so if you can get your known guys to be fully healthy, ready to go this fall, that's massive.
I know you can't hit the quarterbacks in this game, this G-Day scrimmage, but what were the reports of the D-line and the pressures or getting after the quarterback, what would have been assumed as sacks?
Yeah, so I liked what I saw from the defensive line. I thought Joseph Jonah Jonye had some nice moments. He had a nice pass rush win move on Josh Jackson there when he was working with the first team. Jordan Hall looked really good as he continues to recover from injury and get back to 100%. I mentioned they're missing Kristen Miller there. Elijah Griffin had some nice moments. You do worry about that outside linebacker position, especially with Quintavious Johnson going down with an ankle injury. they're really thin there. Even if they're able to get a good guy via the transfer portal, I think that's their number one need this spring at that position. It's just not going to be a position of strength for Georgia. And if Georgia's going to create pressure, create sacks, I think it's going to come from the inside linebacker position, where it's probably Georgia's best position on the team. You have veterans in C.J. Allen and Raylan Wilson who know what to do. And then you have two really, really promising sophomores in Chris Cole and Justin Williams. I don't know if they're going to quite pass Allen or Wilson in terms of snaps on the depth chart, but Williams and Cole were five-star players, and they absolutely looked the part on Saturday. And coming out of that, I think you're really, really encouraged about what the ceiling for this Georgia defense could be. I don't know how quickly they're going to get it and get there, but this has a high ceiling defense, if not maybe potentially a consistent one as well.
And there were a lot of injuries too, right? We didn't get to see all the defensive pieces in this scrimmage.
Yeah, you know, you're missing Dalen Everett, who's going to be one of your starting cornerbacks, and I think one of the better ones in college football next year. Kristen Miller is your most veteran defensive lineman. Gabe Harris, an outside linebacker, is someone who I think they're counting on to play an important role for them. So this defense, you know, it was not the complete defense we're going to see early next season when Georgia goes to Tennessee in September and then hosts Alabama at the end of that month. But seeing all that, knowing all that, there are the pieces here, I think, to be a great defense. I wonder how quickly everything will come together. It's not going to be like the 2021 defense where you knew from that Clemson game on that this was a special unit. But I think as the season progresses, if they're able to stay healthy, there's enough high upside guys on this defense to where it can be a very, very good unit.
All right, let's talk about the real. Can these guys catch the rock, and are we getting yak after the catch? Dylan Bell, Kobe Young, tell me who stood out and what did you think about the wide receiving group?
It's a night and day difference with this group in terms of talent this year. And there were still some drops on Saturday. Cole Spear, freshman Talon Taylor had one. And I believe that like drops are at this point just like a mental thing, and that's something that they do have to figure out and they do have to get solved. But I'm really, really encouraged by what I saw from this wide receiver room. Dylan Bell did a lot of different things for Georgia, and I know last year you heard a lot about him and how hyped up he was. He was asked to do something he's not comfortable with and be sort of that big-bodied outside receiver, and that's just not, I think, what his game is. His best ability is to move around the formation and use him in a variety of different roles, either as a running back or as a wide receiver. Lennon Humphreys had another very strong showing, which I think is encouraging as he's in his second year in the program. And then you have a big guy like Kobe Young. You have a big guy like Noah Thomas. They put them out there the first play of the game with the two tight end set with Lawson Lucky and Oscar Delp. And you're blown away by how much size this team potentially has there. And Kobe Young looked fantastic in the red zone. And, you know, even if he's not, he's kind of maybe like an inverse Julio Jones, so to speak, and where he might not do a whole lot for you 20-20, but in that red area, that is where he plays his best. And again, if they can figure out and get past the drops issue, I'm really encouraged by what you see from this wide receiver room and the talent that they have.
And, you know, Frazier looked like a guy that can be a star in this league. Again, I know much was said because it was big moments where the ball was on the ground. But as Connor Riley joins us from Dog Nation, the running backs, I mean, because you think of Georgia as, you know, tailback you. I mean, everybody claims it, but Georgia's been it. Can they be it again?
Yeah, I think Frazier has the ability to get there. You know, GA, it's not the best day for a running back, especially when it comes to running the ball because of just how much Georgia wants to throw the football there. But by all accounts, Nate Frazier has had a good spring. And I think similar to the drops issue, I think ball security can be a little bit of a mental issue there. And if Nate is able to get that cleaned up, he is as talented as any running back in the country. And we even saw that times a season ago where this is a kid that came in June, July, August, not really knowing a whole lot, and then leads Georgia in rushing in that game against Clemson. So he looks to become a more consistent player this year. The big question at running back is what do they have behind him? Because you know they're not going to give, you know, Nate Frazier 250, 300 carries like you used to see a long time ago. They're going to have to find other running backs in that room. Bo Walker, freshman, again, he's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy, but he's just a really solid football player. He looked really good on Saturday. Second-year running back Chauncey Bowen's impressed a little bit. I like the young players in that room a little bit more coming out of G-Day than I did going into it. The big question is just can this group stay healthy, because that's been an issue at times, availability with the running back room in recent years.
What's your take on this Nico situation? And I don't think Georgia coaches were talking about it, maybe privately, but college football is certainly talking about it, Connor. Mike and I had a great conversation last hour about it as well. You can rewind on the Odyssey app and go listen. What do you think?
everyone involved with this situation comes out worse for it. I've seen today some national media types pushing, this is on the NCAA for not having guardrails and they're looking for a singular victim to blame. Everyone here is involved. Nico for trying to renegotiate this and do this at the 11th hour and trying to hold the Tennessee program hostage. I think he deserves blame for how this all turned out. Because this is a guy who started a playoff game last year for Tennessee and led them to more success than, quite frankly, they're accustomed to in recent years. I think this is on Tennessee for letting Nico believe that he was entitled to this. Again, remember, they gave him a 4-year, $8 million contract before he had ever stepped foot on campus. I think they deserve some blame on this. Obviously, this is just the ecosystem that we live in college football right now. And there are a lot of calls for leadership. There are a lot of calls for someone to prevent things like this from happening again. This is just what college football is now. And Tennessee's worse off for it. I know from a Georgia perspective, if you're a Georgia fan, you're maybe thrilled about this news because that game on September 13th looks a lot less threatening now given the situation that Tennessee has at quarterback.
Right.
But I think the sport in general, like, this is just not a sustainable model where you have guys holding out and then eventually opting out of the program because they're not getting what they perceive to be their market value is. I think everyone involved, and this is such a college football story in this day and age, and Nico really, I think, is the poster child for what college football is these days. And if you're a fan of this sport and you're seeing something like this, I don't blame you one bit if this annoys you and turns you off.
Connor, we were saying earlier, and I've asked you this question before about how now Nick becomes, as he retires, Nick Saban, Kirby's now takes the mantle as the elder statesman of college, even though he's a young guy, and basically throwing stuff out there that maybe other coaches are going, yeah. And the fact that Dan Lanning, a former Georgia assistant, basically goes to Josh Heupel and says, hey, we're hearing that your quarterback is shopping his skills. So do you think, I'm not going to say collusion, but there would be a number of coaches that would link arms and say, yeah, enough of this nonsense, or try to find some way to maybe stop the tide.
I think that it is, that is ultimately what it is going to take, Mike. It is unity from coaches, from players, from the schools, everyone coming together and say, hey, we're going to make sacrifices and we're going to do things that maybe aren't in the sole individual best efforts of our program or in our own best interest to better the sport of college football. And because for so long, this sport has always been, what can each of these schools do to gain the smallest of advantages that show up on Saturday? And so this is going to take a unified front. Like, I think it's a good thing for the SEC that they can't transfer within the conference during this April window. And Kirby was asked about that this weekend. Says, yeah, other schools love it, but I do think that that helps SEC teams because these kids so often want to go play in the best league, which in my opinion is still the SEC. And so it's going to take everyone getting on the same page, everyone willing to sacrifice a little bit off their plate in order for the betterment of the game and so that you don't find yourself in this situation. Because it happened to Tennessee this time, and I do believe some of this is Tennessee's own doing. But if you don't think that this can happen in your program, you just quite frankly haven't been paying attention.
That's what I said. It's not going to matter until all of a sudden your quarterback is asking for more, and it's going to at some point happen. By the way, Nico was, what, the eighth or ninth best quarterback in this conference? Look, I don't know how good Arch Manning is, okay, but he's going to be one of the top five quarterbacks. Lenore Sellers, we saw him at South Carolina. He's really good. You can talk about, you know, the kid at Vandy. What's it, Diego Pava, I believe it is. There are quarterbacks, Connor, what I'm saying, in this conference that I think are better than what Nico was going to be coming into this season, even though he had a chance to prove it. And I don't know if he's the seventh or eighth best quarterback in this conference. And by the way, Garrett Nussmeier may be the best quarterback in the conference at LSU. He might be.
Yeah, and I agree. And the dirty little secret about Nico is he was built and advertised as this program-changing prospect,
right,
five-star quarterback.
Right.
He had five touchdown passes in the seven non-Vanderbilt SEC games for Tennessee last year.
Right.
He just did not look like that caliber of player. And this is a Tennessee offense that's supposed to allow for high explosive and big passing totals. So I think, again, this is just a symptom of where college football is these days. And, you know, Nico, he wasn't, in my opinion, a $4 million quarterback. And he has the right to seek that leverage, but he also has the right to go told to be kick rocks. And I think that's what happened here.
Carl mentioned Nussmeier real quick. I just think, you know, small sample size because he finally got on the field. But I think Lagway is going to be the best quarterback this year in the SEC. Would you buy that?
I'm selling DJ Lagway stock.
Ooh.
The injury news around him is really weird to me, where know, he misses two games last year because of a hamstring injury. He didn't throw at all this spring because of what appears to be a shoulder injury. And I worry about that going into the season. And look, that guy is as talented as there is. A lot of people really like him. I understand, and look, I'm willing to admit I could be very wrong about all this, but the health stuff around DJ Lagway right now is a little weird to me, and at least pulls me off of him a little bit.
Interesting. Yeah, I like the Austin Simmons kid out of Ole Miss. I think he's talented as anybody. Lane Kiffin turns these guys into pros. That's a guy that I think people are going to be sleeping on. We got plenty of time to talk about this, but we're talking about the rankings and where Nico fits in, and now he's not going to be in the SEC. It doesn't matter, but as always, Connor, great stuff on G-Day, and this thing continues, man. What a great offseason it's been so far, right? We got the draft coming up. What do you have coming out?
Yeah, plenty of stuff. Transfer portal opens on Wednesday. We expect Georgia to be active in there, looking for ways to fortify the roster. And before you know it, we'll be here in August, and we'll have a real game at Sanford Stadium to talk about.
No doubt. There he is from Dog Nation. Follow him, guys, on social media. Connor Riley, thanks so much.
Yep, thanks, guys.
It's just crazy, man, like to think. And by the way, everybody thought, speaking of Archman, everybody thought he was going to leave because of the money that was being offered. And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm staying in Texas. And he's going to get his chance to start. But I just think this is the start. Like, this is the tip of the iceberg for not just quarterbacks, Mike. I think a lot of these college players who are considered to be the best, and they have options. And when you have options, you feel like you can go somewhere else and get the money.
But it'd be interesting to see how the coaches do try to push back if there's a way to do that. I mean, easier said than done, in case you're about to get fired because you don't have a quarterback. And by the way, we'll talk more about it. We got plenty of time this week. Do they have the quarterback at Georgia? Because, right now, I know it's a scrimmage, but needs something to be a bit better.
Yeah, I'd like to feel more confident about coming out of the spring game and saying, that's our dude. Right. All right, coming up, Hawks beat them on Sunday. Can they beat them again tomorrow? We'll talk about it as they get ready for the play-in. Guy talks on the way as well. It's Dukes and Bell. It is Dukes and Bell. Listen, we knew the Hawks would be locked into the play-in. We were hoping that maybe they could get to 6 at one point in the season. But as Mike said, the games they should have won, they didn't. And then you get into a situation where you're fighting for the 7th spot, and so now they are in the play-in. So they played Sunday, and truly we already knew this. What was a meaningless game in the sense of we knew where they were going to be. 117-105, they beat the Magic. And I'm going to let you hear Quinn Snyder here coming up, because he talked a little bit about the playoffs and, you know, how things slow down and it's harder in the playoffs. But, Mike, the question is, can you handle one game? One game. Can you handle a team that has given you issues in the Orlando Magic? And that is really the question. Because if we win, guys, then you're in, you're locked in, and you don't play. You'll play at the Celtics on Sunday. So you win Tuesday, you get a break, and your playoffs don't start until Sunday.
You want an all-expense-paid trip to Boston to take on the hottest team in the Eastern Conference. Yeah, man, so that's where it's at. And I said to Carl earlier, I know I heard you mention the commercial. You know, I mean, it's just – you know, they've got that front court, you know, and Wagner is a concern. Banchero is a concern. You know, they've had some injuries. They were up and down. I think they're kind of – I feel like Magic kind of peaking. Remember, Trey didn't play in that game. They didn't play in this game yesterday for the kind of, it was what it was. It was just kind of like the end of the season. Sorry, it just didn't mean much. But, yeah, I just – to me, this is a tough draw for us, playing, you know, in a game where you can get physical up front. I mean, I just think – unless Trey's going to be Superman, right? He's going to have to be, but he doesn't have, or Batman, as we always say every time we talk Hawks, we don't really have that established Robin this year.
Well,
it's going to be eventually, you know, Jalen Johnson is the guy, but and Reese Hoshea is getting better, and Dyson Daniels brings some stuff to the table. But, I mean, it's not like I'm going to depend on, you know, LeVert or somebody else to come in or Yang to go for 25.
You're going to need some of that, Mike. If you're going to beat these guys, hell, if you're going to make a series with the Celtics, because here's the deal. If you lose, you play Friday, and you're going to play the loser of the or the winner, should I say, of the 9-10. So that's
the Heat and the Bulls were tied with the Bulls on the season, Carly, 3-3.
Correct. So that's if you lose. If you win, you're going to need that if you're going to even try to make it a series against the Celtics. And again, I know we beat them early in the year and no Trey and all of that, but the playoffs are just a different animal. But to answer your question, yeah, somebody's got to step up in the playoffs and be that second score, whether it's Okongwu or maybe even it's Dyson Daniels. Meanwhile, Quinn Snyder was talking about, you know, how things are going to be in these playoffs.
I know we need to run. A lot of the times we've lost, it's because we've turned the ball over and haven't got defensive rebounds. So that all makes sense to me. I think in a playoff situation, you're absolutely right. The game can slow down, and the key is to generate good shots. You know,
well, they do slow down, and to Mike's point, if you're talking about half-court defense,
right,
which is the case in the playoffs, and now I'm forcing you to create mismatches and forcing guys that, you know, to try to guard Apollo, Mike, or whether it's Wagner, whoever they might have, that's what they're going to try to do. This is going to feel like a different game, even though you're very familiar with the opponent. And then if you get on, you know, if you get the Celtics, then that's a whole different animal, man. And I know Jaylen Brown, Big O, what did you tell us about Jaylen Brown and what's going on with him? He may not be 100% heading into the first round.
So he's getting painkiller injections for his knee.
Okay.
And Joe Mazzulla confirmed that. It was sort of a rumor, and Joe Mazzulla confirmed that. So coming in with a little bit of a hurt knee, Jaylen Brown. They get the rest, though, for the week.
Right.
Playing.
I just get a feeling, like, I hope I'm wrong, but as you said, I mean, it's a great defense. They've given up the fewest points, have the Magic. We talked about what they do in the front court.
So, they got a nice young team, man.
That's the thing.
They do.
They're kind of like in between us where we are and where Cleveland is. Remember how Cleveland is just kind of just ramped it up? They're like the Pacers are a more athletic version of us. You know, they don't play great defense, but they play more than we do. But, yeah, man, this is I don't like this. This is not a good matchup. And then I don't like, heaven forbid, the Heat beat the Bulls. I don't like matching up with Miami just because I think Miami gives us some of those same issues in the front court with some of their size.
Yeah. And we're going to see. That game is tomorrow, by the way, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. But again, win, and then you get a break, and you don't have to worry about it, and you're in a seven-game series, and then you can strategize, Mike, and try to figure out how you can potentially, you know, take down the Celtics. Now, if you were to do that, it would be a monumental upset. There's no debating it. I mean, there's no expectations right now for the Hawks to do anything in these playoffs. Let's be honest. Nobody expects them to do anything. And maybe that's why Mike said Trey maybe goes off and starts to be playoff Trey and all of a sudden becomes unguardable and makes the shots that, you know, he's made in years past where we went, man, this guy's different. But he hasn't really had that opportunity. And listen, I'll say this. Trey has said it. It's a play-in thing, man. He's tired. He's tired of being in the play-in. He'd like to be an established playoff team, Mike, and have home court advantage. Those things have not happened. Year in and year out for the last 4 years, this is kind of where we've been living. So, you know, I don't know if that's motivation or not, but I do know this. When the season is over, there's going to be some big decisions that the Hawks are going to have to make.
Yeah, man. And as we said, this might necessarily be some of those brands. I mean, your name brands that you know, there's not, and it hasn't worked out. We talked today about Bradley Beal and Paul George and all these big money contacts. The guy's doing nothing. You know, Russell Westbrook at the end of the career basically screwing up everything there, right? I mean, in Denver. So there's a lot of issues that we've got to try to surmount. But I think a big, I always say it, Carl, guy with no vowels in his name playing center, helping out Okongwu, more wing help. But, I mean, maybe we're just going to do some of the parts. I'll give the front office credit because I didn't think LeVert was going to be the good guy that he is. Niang has been great. But LeVert's a free agent. So if you're going to make that trade, you move Hunter off, right?
Got to sign him. You got to
resign him. Otherwise, it makes no sense. It's akin to letting Hunter walk for nothing.
Yeah.
If you don't bring a guy who's shown you a lot of clutch and a lot of good things in the second half. So hopefully they bring Karis back.
I will say this, and we're not in the West, but the West is going to be a dogfight. Like, I have no idea who's coming out of the West. Everybody's talking about the Lakers because LeBron and you know, Luka and all that. OKC is still the team to beat. The Clippers are peaking at the right time. You could still count Golden State in, even though, Mike, they're in the play-in. But you're going to go against Steph and how he has potentially played these, you know, over the last season or so when he needs to turn it on. I don't know, man. I just feel like the West is going to be a lot tougher to come out of. The East, not so much. And
right.
I think that's probably why people are looking at the East and saying down the road here in a month and a half, we'll see the Celtics and the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals.
You got me going down like this NBA stats rabbit hole now. You know, even though with Dyson Daniels, we love his job on perimeter defense, we're like one of the third worst team as far as giving up three-point percentage. Teams are shooting 37.7% from three against us. That's the third worst in the league. So
that's a problem.
That's a major problem.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Especially when, if we can get to the Celtics, what do they take? 75 3 points a game, it seems
like. It seems like it. Right. Yeah, they shoot 50 or so a game. Right. I mean, it may even be more than that. I think they were averaging like 48 a game. So, yeah, that becomes an issue. And then, like, you know, the coaches that have been fired, like Mike Malone, right? What are the Nuggets going to do? They're the fourth seed in the West. Do they turn it on? Is this going to be a spark? Today we find out that Coach Bud gets fired by the Phoenix Suns. Guys, he signed a 5-year, $50 million deal. One season in, done. So, and again, it's not Bud's issue. They've got terrible roster management. They overpaid a bunch of guys, including Bradley Beal, and traded for him, and then Mike, no trade. But that stuff is going on, and, you know, you start to say, okay, well, how's this playoff going to happen? What's going to play out? It starts this week with the play-in, and it starts tomorrow for our Hawks. But
You know, and here's the other thing, too. We talk a lot about Ant-Man. I just want to mention this because I know he's from here. And we always talk about how we'd love to have Ant-Man. Minnesota's always consistently 6th to 7th, 8th. Right. Like, Mike, he hasn't led them to the conference finals. Now, he played really good last year. But the fact is, like, you know, what is Minnesota? I'm curious. Like, he is a guy that I absolutely love his game. But what's Minnesota doing?
Well, I mean, you look at Minnesota. I mean, you got – remember, Julian, you got Randall.
Yeah.
Right? So Randall's over there. Let's see. You got Reed, Naz Reed. Yeah, I'm looking around. Yeah.
Oh, DiVincenzo. I mean, right? But still, they haven't put it together like they thought they would.
How can you say they don't have it together? They have Rudy Gobert, Carl.
Yeah.
The warrior that is Rudy Gobert. The most disliked guy in the entire NBA. I don't know. I'm looking at the points, and they just playing a tough conference. Put them in the East, probably going to do a lot better.
They'd probably be a top three seed. All right, man, what do we have coming up in Guy Talk?
Hey, man, you had your taxes ready, Joe?
You got to bring that up.
Well, guess what? If you live in certain states, you get a few extra weeks.
Okay.
To pay the man.
Okay.
I will explain that. Speaking of money, how much is Coach Bud going to get paid to not coach in the NBA? That's on the way. And how was your spread yesterday? Did you do pimento cheese sandwiches?
Mmm. I do like pimento cheese.
We did. More on that and the diet as well. Coming up. What a play is play. Hope everybody had a great Masters weekend. Hope you enjoyed it as much as Carl and I. Becky, by the way, shout out to the wife. She really brought out all the stops. We had the pimento cheese sandwiches, a little chicken salad, and it was quite tasty. And then we had the neighbors over, and it's funny because it was just watching, you were talking about earlier, when Rory lays up on Amen Corner on 13 and then hits it in Rays Creek.
Yeah.
And all the guys that I play golf with are like, oh, what the, geez, if you're going to lay up, don't do that. I mean, every guy's like really screaming at the television.
I think he got in his head because he had been so aggressive. He's crushing the driver.
Right, stay with it.
And he's going for these greens, and all of a sudden, I'm going to play smart, which wasn't the bad play, but what happened was, Mike, you take something off your game. That was just a terrible swing. Like, and the crazy thing is, guys, you think the pros don't screw up like you do when you're out there playing? That was a typical moment of an 85-yard shot, and you hit the wedge in the water. So, yeah, man, that was bananas. But you know what? Shout out, Becky. So you had the Masters menu.
Yes.
Okay.
Perfect day, too. I mean, just like this morning, woke up, blue skies, great day today, man. Good juju. Hope everybody enjoyed it. Now, a little bit of a not so much controversy. I guess controversy is in the eye or the ear of the beholder. They asked Bryson DeChambeau, did you talk to Rory? And Bryson, by now you've heard the soundbite, we played it. Now he said no, didn't say a word. Till the end where he said congratulations and shook his hand. That's fine. Now a lot of folks are saying, well, why is Rory doing that? And a lot of folks say, well, Rory's trying to be in the zone. And also, if you don't know golf, Rory doesn't really like Bryson DeChambeau. Just, you know, just like there's some guys you don't laugh at the same jokes from different parts of the golf jungle. But Rory, not a fan of LIV Golf, was outspoken about it. He and Bryson are just, they're not going to be boys. So then we find out earlier in the, and if you didn't see this, you see this, Carl, at the practice tee? You got Bryson. Yeah, and I tried to get the audio. Oren and I were trying to clean it up, but it's too muffled.
Okay.
But basically, it's off mic, and it's Bryson next to Rory, and they're warming up. And then Bryson basically jokes and says, hey, man, Rory choked the U.S. Open away. Now, you could say one way of looking at it is, well, Bryson saying he's actually complimenting if he didn't win it. I didn't win this tournament back at Pinehurst. If Rory choked it away, a lot of folks are saying, no, that doesn't really wash. But Rory laughed at it in front of the cameras that were there at the practice tee. But a lot of folks are saying just kind of added more fuel to Rory's fire. Now, granted, Rory still nearly choked it away, but I got no problem with him not being all buddy-buddy with Bryson DeChambeau.
No, listen, it's good for golf. We need some rivalries. You remember when Brooksy and Bryson were going at it? And they don't like each other. It became a big deal, and I loved it. And Brooksy had no issues in saying things, you know, about Bryson. Here's the deal, though. We're not talking about Bryson crumbling under the weight of the moment because Rory ended up having moments of brilliance and ended up winning this tournament. But let's be honest, his distance control, his iron play sucked.
Right.
And when he had the lead and an opportunity to crush Rory, he did not take advantage of it. So we're not talking about that today, about how he crumbled under the weight of the moment and how all of a sudden the tables turned because of the brilliance of Rory. And that was the story. Everybody knew it going in. And so once it played out, it becomes secondary. But his short game, his putting was crap. We're talking about Bryson DeChambeau. So, Mike, he doesn't have a whole lot to say except, hey, I'll be back next year, which he will. And again, he admitted, you know, to some injury, and he's not 100%. But at the end of the day,
You didn't play like a champ, bro.
No, man. And again, Rory gave it to you. He double bogeys the first hole. So now you're off and running if you're Bryson DeChambeau. And DeChambeau couldn't really take advantage of it. He birdied number two, and then he bogeys three and four. Yep. So everything you just said, advantage goes out the window for DeChambeau. The other thing is, and this is more about a commentary on where we are, and again, maybe it's a little generational. It is what it is. But so many people going, well, why wouldn't Rory talk to him? Because he's trying to get in the freaking kill zone. Okay? This isn't the NBA where guys all get done, the game's over, and then...
Let's exchange clubs. Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to hug. I mean, have a little competition. That's what's kind of refreshing. Watching, you know, Celtic City over Boston, and how much, you know, granted, the Lakers, it wasn't just the Lakers. The Celtics hated the Sixers. They had a great rivalry with them and everybody else. And, of course, everybody hated Detroit. But, I mean, this whole thing that everyone's got to be like, oh, my God, I love you, man. Dap up. Just get... You know, sometimes it's cool to just be a pro. You know, Ben Hogan didn't talk to anybody. Tiger wasn't going to sit there and get chatty Cathy with you if he didn't want to talk about it. You talked about it. Even Rocco Mediate. You know, Tiger was on 08? One leg at La Jolla, and he's just trying to Torrey Pines, and he's just trying to get around. He's not going to sit there and chat him up.
Yeah.
That's to me, that's cool. There's nothing wrong. I guess what I'm saying is you got so many people on social media going, what's wrong about that?
There was sportsmanship. They shook hands before the round started, before they tee off and they get introduced. And at the end, there was sportsmanship. It's not like Bryson walked off the 18th and was like, screw this. But I also just think, Mike, you know, he tried to DeChambeau, and I think this was strategy. You guys saw it, right? Rory, they take him to the green or to the first tee, and Bryson comes second, but he's using that crowd to get everybody amped up because there was a portion of the crowd that, hey, they're digging it. And he's slapping, you know, letting people slap his arms, and he's getting into it, sort of like how he came off on Saturday, and everybody was all amped up. But he was trying to use that as energy to motivate him and also, I think, kind of tick Rory off.
And that's cool. Like I said, I mean, I like DeChambeau when it's working. When it's not working, all the ticks and everything, as I said, it's like Phil Mickelson on steroids in the spectrum because he just looks ridiculous sometimes. I mean, you say, how do you generate any feel with your arms so rigid? But that's his style. Rory wins $4.2 million for the effort. Speaking of money, all right, buddy, bye. Tomorrow is tax day. At least it used to be. A couple of states, Carl, get a reprieve. By the way, your tax is all done?
My people better have them done.
Okay. I mean, my good friend HR and his buddies at Block got mine done.
They better have them done.
IRS filing deadline is tomorrow, but there's a couple of states that get extra time because we had natural disasters.
Mm.
That includes Alabama, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. Because we had the storms in the northern part of the state and other issues that came around Georgia.
So that's the entire state?
We get till May 1st. Yes, all of Georgia.
Very nice.
I did not know that. This is from Newsweek. So the tax deadline extended to May 1st. Check with your tax guy. But this is what Newsweek is reporting. They're generally pretty accurate.
That's interesting. And you know what? It should be. I mean, there's stuff that happens throughout the course of the year. And I hate to say this. Like, if you are dealing with home issues or you don't have a house, Mike, and it got destroyed – yeah, I'm worried about my taxes. Like, seriously, there should be some reprieve there. So that's good to hear. I did not know that.
Hey, man, I don't know if you saw this on TV today. I was talking to Day-Day, who's producing our show now, and we're watching ESPN, and it was NFL Live, and they had the Savannah Bananas in ESPN studio up in Bristol.
For what?
To promote more of the Savannah Bananas, and apparently ESPN is going to be broadcasting Savannah Banana Games. Now, they want to get out of the business with Major League Baseball, but the Savannah Bananas have become such a phenomenon. ESPN apparently is going to be showing some of those games. Matter of fact, the next up for them is going to be up in Death Valley. I saw a video of Clemson getting prepared for the Bananas coming up there to Death Valley.
Listen, this is the modern-day Globetrotters, right? That's what this is, in my opinion. And the Globetrotters have lasted a very long time. They traveled the world, Mike. They entertained a lot of folks. And I don't have any issues with this. I know they were just at Truist Park for like 3 days. And a lot of folks went. My neighbors, a lot of folks I talked to. Great. I don't have an issue with it. I just think if you're going to put it on television now consistently, and I don't know how often we're talking about, it will wear out. Because the stunts are the same, right? The dances are the same. All the things they do, the umpires, and it's all fun. But eventually, like, you're like, all right, I saw this six times already. If you go see them live, it's different, and you feel like you're getting a show.
As a kid, it was still kind of neat. Are you going to get dunked with a bucket of water, or will it be confetti? And then you didn't realize they had a plant in the stands, and you got the water. But it was still fun when you were 10.
Hey, man. Belichick, he's really digging his vibe with his young lady friend of his. She's got him caught up, Mike.
Jordan Hudson. Some are saying that the coach's a little whipped.
A little?
Well, some would say a lot. Apparently, she was at practice wearing a blue and black overcoat or jacket tied at the hip. But what's that song? I like a girl in a short skirt and a long jacket. Yeah, wearing some nice boots. Kind of like reminiscent of like a go-go girl from back in the 60s.
Are you insinuating that she had this on and maybe there was nothing else?
No, no, no. She's got a snakeskin, a printed miniskirt, and a matching trench coat.
Okay.
But it was kind of funny to see her prancing. I'm not going to say prancing. Prancing around the practice. But she was walking around the practice field, and there's old Mumbles behind her. But Jordan Hudson drew a lot of attention at Tar Heels spring practice.
Well, you know what this is called, right? Tease.
Yeah,
that's what that's called. Coach, your girlfriend's here. I see her. Let's lock in.
Now, last month we found out, speaking of whipped, it was reported that Belichick has requested that his girlfriend, Miss Hudson, be copied on emails sent his way.
Oh, wow.
According to emails uncovered by Axios and Assembly as part of a story about UNC's budget. There was that big Athletic article and the ESPN article that came out last month about him. Belichick, well, just loving his time, and good for him, obviously. She's, what, 48 years his junior?
Yeah.
But, man, she really isn't.
Well, she reads more than
But here's the thing. Is she going to Yoko Ono North Carolina? Is she going to be the Yoko of this deal? Because, I mean, what does she need to be copying on the emails?
Like I said, Mike, she's got this brother hooked.
Don't you have to be good to be Yoko'd?
Yeah, I mean, well, John Lennon was pretty good.
So if they're bad, it's not a Yoko.
I don't know what the term is for.
No, I mean, like, the Beatles were good until Yoko Ono broke them up, despite what her stupid biography just said, because that's her story, and she's sticking to it. And everyone knows that she ruined the Beatles, Carl, and I'll die on that hill. I'll die on that hill. And now, like, I don't care. I want to see Carolina lose every stinking game. The way Belichick likes to use his girl as a prop to troll Falcon fans with 28-3.
Now, that's a problem.
Because Belichick didn't get hired here in Atlanta by Mr. Blank.
Yeah, that is true. I agree with that aspect. But listen, I don't know, Mike. I feel like she is at this point now where she's like, Bill, you'll do what I say.
It sure sounds like it.
And he's like, okay, I need to be in on the emails. You need to be in on the emails. I don't know what's going on there.
And make sure that sure that she gets all of my emails. She CC'd on everything. She's been a real pain in the ass on this one.
Is she going to get a headset and be in the booth at some point,
too?
Well,
it's going that way.
Or
I mean, like,
do we even see a controversy of player Belichick and girlfriend?
That would be something.
Wouldn't that be something
that
right there?
That would be something. But my point is, guys, she's showing up at a Belichick practice?
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, what else is she going to do? Wait for Big Daddy to come home?
Well, normally, yes. But I'm going to show up dressed like that, Mike?
Hey,
come
man.
On.
Well, yeah, it's a free country, baby. By the way, back in February, she had...
No distractions.
Happy meat-tiversary. Bill Belichick, cheers. It was the year anniversary, commemorating the fourth meat-versary with Belichick 4 years ago. It's crazy. They've been actually palling around now.
So he's been... Never mind.
Well, he met first on the plane, and then eventually it led to dating. And then
you know where I was going with that.
You know
you?
That.
I'm sorry.
Hey, man. On to another story.
Four years.
By the way, I got to preface this so I don't get an email. I don't want to get nasty grams. This is not a political story. This just happened today in Washington.
Okay.
Ohio State was at the White House, and the vice president dropped the trophy. J.D. Vance attended Ohio State, if you know from Hillbilly Elegy, his book. And they were presented with Ryan Day and the staff. And apparently, you know, you always see that thing. It looks like it's one piece. Apparently, it sits into a cradle. Eventually, luckily, players did grab it, so nothing hit the ground.
The Dr. Pepper trophy?
Yes. Well, whatever this is, the base hit the ground.
Okay.
But the actual cylindrical piece, the gold and silver, did not hit the ground. But needless to say, there were a lot of laughs. And, like, you know, so keep J.D. Vance away from the friggin' trophy, apparently.
That's funny. That's funny. The president wasn't there?
Again, I'm going to stay in my lane, Carl.
I didn't know. I haven't seen it.
He was there, but because he was an Ohio State alum, I presume that J.D. Vance wanted to handle the trophy,
gotcha.
Get his hands on it.
Okay.
It's kind of a Dan Quayle, George Bush moment or Gerald Ford moment.
It really is.
Yes, my bad. Again, but that's why I'm staying in my lane, lest someone get, you know, because all you have to do is mention the vice president and people are just going to go bananas, which is a shame. Hey, man, one more story for you over the weekend. You and I were joking around, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks back. It might have been two, was it last week? About, because we were driving so much on the road. Yeah, it was the broadcast on Wednesday when we were at Twin Peaks, and I was talking about, you know, people driving slow in the left-hand lane. And it was pretty funny. I was at the gym today. I want to give a shout out to Gerald. He's retired APD. And he said that, you know, one time he was driving home from work. And he said, he can talk about this now. He's off. He's retired. But he was like, he was so very tempted to light up this car and pull them over for going too slow, which technically you can do in this state of Georgia.
Yes, you can.
Just no one ever does it. And I would say to GSP and Fulton and APD, hey, you know, maybe if we start pulling people over driving slow in the left-hand lane, you won't have, okay, people like
or maybe me, that are going to go all the way, Carl, to the right-hand lane, and then all of a sudden everyone starts speeding up, and that creates more accidents because people get frustrated and they start doing stupid stuff that's high risk to try to get close a gap that maybe not there to pass the idiot in the left-hand lane, slowing up a mile and a half of traffic. But enough about my drive home.
The problem, though, Mike, is when you see a guy pulled over, you automatically assume he was
speeding, right.
Not going too slow.
Well, I can tell you this. If he's in a Buick, he wasn't arrested for speeding, or a Tesla, for that matter. There's Guy Talk. Welcome Day-Day into the fold as our new executive producer, the brains of the operation.
Coming up, we're going to talk to Graham McCauley in less than 20 minutes. We're trying to find out what's wrong with the Braves, and it seems like there's a lot when your ace doesn't have ace stuff. But when we come back, who are they focused in on? I'm going to tell you next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.